This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode number 246. Holy shit. Of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
My name is John.
246 episodes. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So I watched some shows and stuff. Did you?
Dude, I watched so many friggin' shows. It's like... There were so many shows that were on my list that I actually, like, I usually keep a thing in OneNote and I write down the shows as I watch them. In this case, I wrote down all the shows that I had to watch, and then as I watched them, I would highlight them so that I would remember which ones I had and hadn't watched.
Yep.
And not only were there a lot of shows, I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 titles. And then, like, with Big Mouth, 2 episodes. Marvel's Legends, 2 episodes. Cobra Kai, like, fucking 20 episodes.
There's 10 in the season.
And it was 20 that I watched. Not really.
I know,
so,
what
yeah,
you're saying.
There was a lot that I watched this week. I did not get any movies as a result.
Well, I had surgery on last Thursday, and so I got laid up Thursday afternoon, so I started watching some stuff, and I watched a shit ton. So we're recording on Tuesday the 12th. I watched 5 movies.
Wow. That's actually not a lot for you lately.
Yeah, I know, but I can sum up those 5 movies rather quickly.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I feel like we're on Name That Tune. Like, Mike, sum up those movies.
I watched The Bourne Collection. All 5 of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Bourne Identity, The Bourne Supremacy, The Bourne Ultimatum, The Bourne Legacy, and Jason Bourne. Good flicks.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I enjoyed the fuck out of it. And, like, they're all, you know, what's interesting is none of them are rated R, right? They're all PG or PG-13, and right. So I had no issues watching them while my son was bombing around the living room while on the TV while I was laid up with my leg just resting. So, yeah, I ended up watching all 5 of them. Wasn't setting out to do that. I was just going to watch the first one, and I was like, I'll watch this. I'll watch the third one. What the hell? I haven't seen Legacy in, you know, maybe the one time. Shit, might as well watch Jason Bourne. So, yeah. Great
just
flicks.
Just the way that comes out, it reminded me, like, when somebody says Jason Bourne, I immediately want to start singing Stacy's Mom, but with Jason Bourne in there. You know, Jason Bourne has got it going on.
And it kind of does.
Yeah, it's stupid, but yeah. You know how you get those things in your head sometimes?
Heck yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was something that was on the other day. And
there was something in the air that night? The stars
looked like? No. They were singing something, and I couldn't... Or they were stating something. I couldn't quite make it out. But all I could think of was that Napoleon Dynamite post-credit scene where Napoleon's brother is singing to his bride, and he's like... Always and forever.
Yeah.
That's all I could think about. Yeah.
Nice.
So, but, you know, it feels like the week has been such... It feels like it's been such a long week that, like, for instance, I know I watched This Is Us.
Uh-huh.
But I'm trying to remember, like, what the fuck was the episode about?
Well, would you like to start you off?
Yeah, well, no, Yes, go right ahead.
I was going to say, if you're questioning it, then I can start talking about it.
I'm trying to remember what the episode was about.
So, three different things. One, this is where Randall got the letter, you know, the printout from the website.
Where the guy was like,
hey, I knew your mom. And basically, that's all it says is, I knew your mom. And so he's immediately like, William fucking lied to me. Or... you know, he didn't. This guy's lying to me, so...
Yes, he was torn. And you know what, though? It makes sense. Because at first, it's irrational Randall, but then he's like, I can't talk to this guy about my mom, because then that means if William lied to me, then that's going to wreck me too much.
Right.
That's going to wreck me more than me not knowing about my mom. Which, I guess, makes perfect sense when you think about it.
Right. Because he didn't even know William. And then he kind of let him in and kind of, you know, went through his ups and downs. And by the end, he was like so close to him. You know, he felt like he had two dads and he was just so close. And now he's like, if it turns out that he lied to me about that, then he probably lied to me about everything. And my whole view of him is shattered. And I don't want that. I want to preserve the illusion. And his wife was just like, dude. You need to talk to this guy. And he's like, nope, I can't do it. I'm going to go for a run. She's like, why don't you call your therapist? He's like, nope, going for a run. And then he runs out and she's like, he need to call his therapist.
And that's what he did on his run, was call his therapist.
Exactly. And his therapist basically said what she said, which was, dude, you're already in it.
You know?
Which I'm glad she didn't pull the, that's what I told you. Why didn't you listen to me? She was just like, oh, good, you're going to do it.
Yeah. And then I liked it when he called high and he goes, Hi. I mean, hello. I mean, I love the awkwardness of it. Yep. And then, of course, we do get the satisfaction straight away of Hi saying, well, William probably didn't lie to you, because as far as he probably told you the truth he knew, which was that she was dead.
Right.
And so that instantly, you know, Beth and Randall start crying, and then Randall can't even talk. So Beth has got to talk for him.
Yep.
Because he's just like, oh, thank God William didn't lie to me. William didn't know either, but of course I'm sure that's going to turn into, why the fuck didn't you try to find me then? You know, I'm sure we'll see that in this week's episode.
Yes. But at the same time, since she's already passed away, I don't think that it'll carry,
she's dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Breast cancer, 2015. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't think it'll carry as much weight. Even if he is like, why didn't she seek me out? There's never going to be any resolution from it. So he's going to go down there and just see how she lived and have to be okay with it one way or the other. Yeah. He has to be okay with it. So,
so that's this week's episode. From what I remember seeing of the trailer, the preview, if you will, is that Randall and Beth see Hi. So,
Hi.
Also we go back to Kate where she finds out that Mark got her pregnant and then, she had an abortion and her going through that abortion. So we get that through the flashbacks. And then, of course, you know, Kate, you know, Kate's husband there, I can't think of his name right now, finding that Toby, you know, Mark was a piece of shit to him. So he's like, what's his name and where can I find him? It's like, oh, shut the fuck up. Like, I hate shit like that.
That was a little overly dramatic reading of it. Like,
right.
He said that, but it was more like, I need you to tell me this guy's name. And I'm going to go rip his head off.
Yeah. And it's like, why? For something that happened before you knew Kate existed.
Exactly. You know, I get that he was trying to be like the, you know, somebody hurt my woman. I'm going to.
Yeah.
That's all great and everything. But at the same time, she's like, dude, fucking chill out. And.
What did you think of Kate going and confronting Mark? You know, she finds, okay, I love the fact that he had a MySpace page.
Yes.
Because it's like, and Kobe's like, he still has a MySpace page? You
know? Yes.
Which would be on point because he's all about music and MySpace is all about music connections, I guess.
Yep.
But she finds out where he works and then she goes to his place of business because she needs to confront him for. Which I guess I took issue with that. And Kate was sitting in the living room while I watched the episode. And Kate was just like, yeah, this is why I stopped watching the show. Because she took issue with it. Go ahead.
So I definitely understand that. I didn't take as much issue. I did take some issue. You know, I was like, Yeah. Do you really need to go confront him? Like, after all this time at this point, she wanted closure, I guess, because you could see in the flashback that she went to try to talk to him about it, and he just treated her the same way.
Oh, yeah, no, he was definitely a douchebag, and he definitely, his life has sucked for him, clearly.
So, at this point, when they're talking about having a second kid and how hard it was, you know, she's reminded of this, and she knows that since it bothers her this much, she doesn't have that closure, and she wants to have it, and basically tell him off, which... Some people need that. I kind of like Toby's response. You know, I think it was, for me personally, I wouldn't need that. But some people do need that. So, you know, if she needed it, then she needed it. The one thing that I will say about it is that I liked that Toby stayed in the car. That she pointed that out. She's like, he's over there and he would love to rip your head off. And it's like, relax. But... the fact that afterwards she was like, she thanked him, you know, she thanked Toby. She was like, look, you know, you didn't look at me like a victim. You didn't go out there and try to fight my battle for me. You let me just go and talk to him. It felt like they were wrapping this up very quickly, you know, for something that came on the episode before. And then this was the resolution, like immediately. On the one hand, I'm glad because I didn't want to sit there all season watching this play out. That would have been very annoying.
No, I did not either.
But it also was a very quick turnaround, ultimately. And I think that's part of the problem.
But here's my big issue with it.
Sure.
Like, all right, so let's just compare my relationship with my ex, your relationship with your ex, you know, because we both were in long relationships. So they both broke up about the same time, or mine was, you know, a couple years after, whatever it was. But it's similar in nature.
Roger.
I still have to deal with it because of my kids.
Yes, you do.
So if I was still harboring something that she, I was pissed off at her about, or I needed closure for, or whatever, and I decided to bring it up because I just couldn't take it anymore because I'm still reminded of it or whatever it was, because of my still having contact with her, it would make sense for me to bring it up to get that closure so we could continue having our relationship because of our kids. Whatever, you know what I mean?
Yep.
If you were having an issue with your ex that you haven't seen in 10 years, would you go track her down to confront her about it? Or would you try to find another way to get closure?
No, I wouldn't. But again, that's me. Like, I wouldn't care enough to do that. Yeah. I'd be like, wow, this sucks. I still have issues, but fuck it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Whereas, like I said, some people need that kind of stuff. Kind of like, you know, some people need to have a drink at the end of the day to function.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I guess.
I'm not saying that what she did was right. I'm just saying for some people, that's what they need.
Yeah.
You know, more power to them if that's the case, but I don't, and I wouldn't have done that myself.
Also, we get some Kevin drama in this episode. He's supposed to be filming a movie in LA. They want to move it to Vancouver because of, because of COVID and because of filming costs and everything. And so he's got to leave to quarantine for 2 weeks and then 3 weeks of filming and then return. And he's like, no, I can't do that because I'm not leaving Madison and my kids. And Madison's basically like, let's do the math. You go and do all this and you come back and I'm still going to be pregnant.
Right.
So, you know, do it. But
she wants the understanding that afterwards, you know, that basically, like, yeah, you had already signed up for this movie. You had already made commitments. I'm still pregnant, so the kids aren't even here, so I don't need your help with this right now.
But you once know, the kids are here.
Right.
Because they're interviewing a nanny.
Yep.
That is highly sought after. And he's like, do you have your passport? Are you going to be able to travel with us? Because in Kevin's mind, he's like, wherever I'm filming a movie, you and the kids are coming with me. And Madison's like, well, no, because I want to have a normal family where we stay home and where we live together. And, you know, and I get Kevin. Kevin's like, I've been working 20 years for this. I'm finally going to get where I need to be and et cetera, et cetera. And so I can understand his plight as well, because that is something he's worked 20 years for, and he's finally getting that break he wants.
Right.
But I love the flashback to when he was married to the first girl. I can't think of her name.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, Randall, young Randall, is just like, can't believe you're going to go to L.A. and whatever. Chloe's going to stay here in New York and go to school. And
Zoe.
I wouldn't want Beth to be that far away from me at all, type of thing.
Right.
And at that time, young Kevin's like, yeah, we'll be fine. It'll work out. We clearly know it doesn't.
Right.
And Kevin, on his taxi cab to go to the airport for his, you know, to get to Canada for his quarantine, he calls Kevin. And basically, it's because he's like, Kevin calls Randall because he's basically, I need Randall to tell me what to do.
Yeah. He's like, what would Randall do in this situation?
And that was what was cool, because they talk, and he's like, you know, they talk about what Randall and Kate had talked about, and he apologized for the things he said, and it was a good moment that they hadn't addressed yet.
Yep.
In this season, what happened last season. And I like the fact that when he said to him, like you just said, I've been thinking a lot lately, what would Randall do? And Randall's like, oh, man, that means a lot. And, of course, Randall starts crying and everything. And then he decides to go, and Beth walks in because he's going to call hi.
Yep.
So, yeah, I thought it was a good episode. Overall, I mean, we just talked about it for 15 minutes, so apparently we must have liked it.
Yeah, I think they had a lot of things that were resolved. They moved the stuff along. I think Kevin is on the verge of doing something stupid again.
Oh, yeah, you know? Probably.
We still remember all the flash forwards that we've seen in the future. We see him and the kids, but we have not seen her.
Right. But I think it's implied, because he says to the kids, your mother. So I think it's implied that, you know, unless they're going to do pull us some shenanigans horseshit and she miscarries and then.
Nope. I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking that she's had all these problems with bulimia and anorexia.
Yeah.
And all these health issues, and she's still pretty skinny. She might die in childbirth.
Oh. And so it's a stepmother, but it's like they're okay. Yeah. All right. I could believe that one.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past this show. You know, when he says mom, it could be, you know, your mother. It could be whoever he's with at the time.
Yeah. Lovecraft Country. Here's a show I would love to just binge.
Oh, wasn't it friggin' good?
So much happened in this episode. Whitey's on the moon.
what a great name, huh?
I just don't know if we, like, I don't know if I'm intelligent enough or articulate enough to explain everything going on in this episode or everything we've kind of seen.
I think I know what you're talking about, because this is a very deep show. This is not the kind of thing that you can just watch in the background.
No, it's not. You have to pay attention to it. The storylines are complex. The wording, if you will, is complex. You know, like, they're at the lodge, you know, which one they showed at the end of the last episode.
Exactly.
And they knew who Atticus was. And I guess I'm going to say the long and the short of it, because, you know, that's how I say things, even though it doesn't make any sense. You know how it works.
When you're cutting a promo.
Yeah. Atticus is a direct descendant of Titus Braithwaite, who built this house that they're at.
The second house,
because the first one burnt down. But he's a direct descendant, and it's basically implied that either Atticus's great-great-grandmother, whatever it is, was either raped by this guy and got impregnated, or they were having a consensual relationship. But either way, everyone died in the mansion when it burnt down due to this fire, except she ran out and survived.
Right.
And Titus Braithwaite is the one who founded this secret society and built the original mansion. And then Samuel Braithwaite is the guy we're meeting now, who's the current owner of the house and leader of this cult. And
cult's a good word.
Yeah. And basically the only reason why he's there, why Atticus is there, why they wanted Atticus is there, is because of his direct descendant blood, the ritual they want to do so that they can go back to the Garden of Eden.
Yep.
Like, again, I don't know if I can explain this properly. So they need him for this ritual. And at the same time, we learn that Letty and George were made to forget by Samuel's daughter.
Yep.
Christina. And basically, because she's the one that blew the whistle that controlled the sent the monsters back in the previous episode and in this episode when we see them. But basically, she's like, I've done everything I could my entire life to be accepted in this society, and I'll never get one of those rings that you're going to get just because you're a man.
Right.
And she also doesn't think that all black people are bad. She's not a massive racist like pretty much everyone else is.
Right.
And she also tells... So Atticus wants his family, wants Letty and George to remember what's going on because he needs them. And they keep, you know, and so she says, oh, okay. And she like waves her hand and essentially makes them remember.
But they remember they all at once.
Yes. And they start freaking out because the way they come flooding back in and everything. So they break out of... They break out of the building.
Yeah.
They find Atticus's dad, and they discover kind of where he is. And they get him, and they rescue him, even though Atticus's dad is like, I wrote that under duress. Why would you be? Basically, his dad's a piece of shit and not grateful that they're there.
Right.
I would have gotten out on my own, you know, type of shit. As they're trying to escape, they're driving across the covered bridge. We see these emblems that are carved into the bridge, like we saw them carved into the doors, that basically puts up the shield that makes them crash into it.
Yep.
And then
Which was awesome. The effect on that was awesome.
Yeah. Samuel shoots Letty and George, with the implication being that we can save them as long as you agree to do this ritual. So Atticus agrees to it, and they save Letty, but he won't. He won't save George till after Atticus does what he wants him to do.
Yep.
And apparently the reason why the mansion burnt down the first time and killed everyone is because they were attempting this ritual and it didn't go well.
Yeah.
So while they're doing the ritual, as we see like a doorway opening up and it's assumed to be Eden, all of a sudden there's a black woman and old clothing. Possibly Atticus's great-great-grandmother, whoever. And something happens, and it
looks like she's pregnant. It looks like she's rubbing a pregnant belly.
Yeah, but then Atticus does something, and like a big wave comes out, and turns Samuel and everyone else in there, all the other members that are in there in this ritual, just to like ash or stone or whatever it is. But they all die and fall apart to little pieces. And then the mansion catches fire.
And Atticus, doesn't just catch fire. It like fucking it explodes.
And, yeah. And Atticus manages to escape. And Letty is alive, but George dies from his injuries. And I think don't they escape with Christina as well?
No. I don't think, like, I remember that the last scene was just him looking in the car and seeing George dead.
Okay. Yeah, so anyways, this is a show I could definitely binge, quite frankly, because it's just, I got sucked into episode 2 so much, I'm just like, I gotta fucking see what happens next. But at the same time, each episode feels like a movie.
Yes.
Like, it feels longer than how long it actually is. So...
Yep, I agree with you there. It feels like they're all standalone, like separately contained stories, almost like they're separate chapter or separate books, not even separate chapters.
And yes.
I really dig it. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I could sit down and binge this whole thing, but I'm kind of enjoying it this way for right now. Yeah. We may reach a point where we're like, fuck it, let's do the next six episodes. But
yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
If I want to binge a show next, I think the one I would pick next would be Big Mouth just to get it done.
Yeah.
Not that
we may end up doing.
Which, not that I disliked Big Mouth by any means.
Yeah, this season has been kind of weak sauce.
Yeah, it's just, all right, let's just get it over with. They're short episodes. It's something I could sit down and binge, and something I could really kind of not pay attention to and get away with it type of thing.
Yep.
Like what we have episodes. We had four stories about hand stuff.
This one was actually good. I like this one.
And the funeral? Is that what we had?
Yes.
Oh, there's only two episodes left then.
I was waiting for that. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure we're at the end anyway.
Yeah, yeah. There's only two episodes left then. So we'll watch that. But yeah, no, friggin' okay. So this one is four stories about hand stuff, and we get Murray and Connie basically open up the episode in bed together, and I like how they they talk about, so what, that last episode was just like a dream or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
And then they got very meta, and they were talking about like, "Ooh, this is called four episodes about hand stuff. Oh, this is going to be good."
Yeah, and they actually have titles for all four of them. Touched by a jangle, the Handmaiden's Tale, the Gluberman Method, and then Blue Balls.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Blue Balls kind of pissed me off.
Me too.
Just because the implementation or the implications. First off, tired of Blue Balls. I'm tired of people saying that that's a thing. You know, go finish yourself off. Just deal with it. You know, nobody owes you anything.
Right.
So fuck off.
Yeah. Basically, it's Michelangelo and Jesse making out, and he's like, "Oh, I like making out with you, but I always have so much tension." Basically, he does the douchebag guy thing where he's like, "Will you give me a hand job to relieve my tension?"
Yep.
And he's obviously never done that, and then makes kind of a comment that, "Oh, I guess, yeah," and then he just whips his dick out.
I love the fact that his dick was from, like, Staten Island.
Yes, yeah. I know, he's from Britain, but I'm from Staten Island. I get it. It seems so funny. And, we have that whole comedy bit where it's talking, and he's like, "Go ahead, just give me a big smack. You'll see, I'll pop right back up."
Yep.
Yeah. And then so she's laughing, so he gets mad that she's laughing, which I could understand that.
I could as well.
And then calls her a cock tease and da 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 da, and then breaks up with her and goes in the bathroom to finish himself off. And then I like the comment that Connie made, which was like, "Well, you could have just done that to begin with." Let's see here. Oh, the one that kind of, not dragged, but went throughout the whole thing, is that Devon divorces Devin. You know, they broke up, but they got to be dramatic sitting in divorce. So it's, they basically, the rumors come out that it's because Devin won't give Devon a hand job.
Right.
And so,
and I love how she's like, you know, I need everybody to respect my privacy while I live stream for the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
My anguish and pain.
And then finally, at the end of the episode, he just comes out with like, "Yeah, that's not why we broke up. We broke up because she's not a good person."
Yep.
We also get a big story with Jay and Lola, where Lola basically says, "Do this," you know, basically tells him what to do to make it work well.
Yes.
Matthew's hanging out with Aiden's friends, and Murray is like, "You gotta, you know," tells Andrew that if you want Aiden to stick around with you, et cetera, you gotta do the deed. And he attempts it, and his buddy's like, "I'm not ready for that yet. How about we just start by telling your mom and that we're a couple?"
How's that? By the way, do you realize his boyfriend is Zachary Quinto?
No. Oh, okay. I thought I recognized his voice, but no.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
I like that. I can get behind that.
It's definitely a very distinctive voice. You know, we talk about those all the time on here where people have very distinctive voices. And yeah, his is very, and I looked it up. I'm like, I know this voice. And I looked, oh, yeah, there it is.
Nick and Andrew are friends again, and you know, they're back to being buddies. And Andrew tells Nick his method, everything he has to go through, like, which is like almost singing a song and this and that and everything. And got to check the lock 4 times and got to do this. And I need 4 tissues. And, you know,
and it's a song. Like, it's a whole song in production and everything. Yeah. And like, if he gets interrupted midway through, he has to go back and start over again. And
yeah. So Andrew decides, you know, I'm going to do it without the method. Just, and I'm not even going to close the door. And he does. And then his like grandfather, uncle, whatever. I can't think of the word they used. It's a Jewish term, whatever. Shinga or something, dies.
Oh, yeah.
And so he blames himself for it. And then somehow at the funeral ends up masturbating in front of his dead Shinga, because he sees the ghost of his Shinga who tells him to do it. And then the whole family walks in, and then his Shinga's like, you killed me, so I did this. Like, it was just, that was just absurd.
It was ridiculous. We also got the throwback to his two cousins, you know, the one who tries to seduce him and the one who fucking hates him.
Yeah, we're merging 7 and 8 in this one. That's what happened in episode 8.
Yes.
His Zadie, happened. Yes, sorry, you're right. His cousins show up, and yeah. And this one is also where Matthew and Aiden, you know, they decided to compete in the cake cook-off. And because when his mom finds out that he's gay, because she sees texts on his phone, she's like, oh, well, you can't go to the church anymore, and I can't accept you. And
yeah.
So.
This is also where Jesse comes back for the funeral, and she basically, she has to stay with her dad in town, and you know, he's got the new girlfriend and the room that she's going to be staying in. He's got like a recumbent bike in there. He's like, oh, just let me move that out of there. So like, you can tell that it's like, it's not that she's an imposition to him, but she basically like, she's temporary. He's like, oh, let me just move this out of here for now, but it'll go right back in there. Like, this is not her space. It is a space that she's going to be in temporarily.
Yeah.
But she, Her mom and dad basically tell her, they're like, look, we've been thinking about it, and we think that, you know, you shouldn't be in the city. You should be back here with your friends. You should be with your dad and blah, blah, blah. And at first she's like really upset about it. But then, you know, I love how Connie basically comes in and kicks Tito and the Depression Cat's ass, throws them away. And she's like, she's fucking done with you. These parents are actually doing their best and they are looking out for her, and fucking kicks their asses, and they go away. And then Jesse kind of breaks down and she's feeling better. Like, it's going to be okay.
Excuse me.
And then they had that very emotional, her and her mom had that very emotional, like, send off where her mom was taking the train back. And she's like, you know, I'll come back tomorrow and I'll take you to Target and we'll buy you stuff. And she's like, do you promise? There's a bike in my room. And yeah, he's going to clean it up. Like, it was over the top, but at the same time, it was very touching.
Yes, it was.
Oh, and friggin' Nick, like, who's still confused, still trying to figure out what he's doing. You know, Jesse comes to him and she's feeling very confused and she's feeling very sad and she wants a friend. And he gives her a hug and then tries to kiss her. And she's like, I just wanted a friend. Why are you doing this? And he's like, because I had a dream. And in the dream, and she's like, you had a dream? Are you a psychopath? Yeah. Not good, Nick.
So we got 2 episodes left of that.
Yep.
Has not been the best season, but it does feel weird where we're at now compared to where the season started, you know?
Yep, I agree. We started
at that summer camp for like 3 episodes, which I thought was going to be the entire season.
But yeah, I really legitimately thought that summer camp was the whole season. So it's still been good, though. I'm glad that they're away from there.
speaking of cartoons, to stay on the cartoons, I happened to watch on Hulu, because they had an early premiere of something, a TV show called The Great North.
Yes. Yeah. And you said that you had watched it, so I watched it as well.
Yeah, I was thinking, oh, let's just watch this, might as well. the next episode one aired January 3rd. Episode two is coming out this coming weekend. What'd you think of it?
I thought it was okay.
I thought it was just okay as well.
It's young, you know, they had to get a lot into that first episode. You know, laying out the characters and the stories and everything like that. They live in Alaska. I liked some of the jokes, like, you know, he broke his leg. Is it regular broke or Alaska broke? Oh, it's Alaska broke. Oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah, the description, the premise is takes place in Alaska, where single dad, Beef Tobin, voiced by Nick Offerman, juggles with keeping his kids close together, including being involved in with his only daughter, Judy's artistic dreams in the local mall. And he doesn't like change. He doesn't like when his kids leave and on and on. And so Jenny Slate is voicing Judy Tobin.
Yep. Which is good because she's not going to be voicing Missy anymore.
Yep. Will Forte voices Wolf Tobin. The oldest son and his fiance is Honeybee Shaw, voiced by Dulce Sloan. All comedians, stand-up comedians, basically. Paul Rust is Ham Tobin, who is the middle gay son. And then Megan Mullally is voicing Judy's boss at the point and click. And then they actually have Alanis Morissette playing Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
Is Judy's imaginary friend that she talks to in the stars.
Her imaginary friend, Alanis Morissette.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
So. And you may already know this, but Megan Mullally and Nick Offerman are actually married in real life.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yep, they've done some fun commercials together and some stand-up type stuff. Yep.
Excuse me about that. I couldn't find my mute button and I yawned. I'll probably check out the second episode, but I don't think it's going to be a priority show for me. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely not. Like, this did not convince me that I wanted to watch more. Like you said, I may be like, oh, I got nothing to watch on a walk. I'll do this.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, let's see here. Alice in Borderland. We watched episode 5. We've got 3 more to go. In this episode, Aristu and Usagi, they are tracking...
Not to be confused with the rabbit from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. Or Usagi Yojimbo.
Exactly.
They are, and Aristu is the guy and Usagi is the girl. They are tracking other players that have wrist tags that he remembers seeing on people where they got the radio off of that talks about the beach.
Yep.
And basically... finding them and tracking them to a place where they get abducted and dragged in. And basically the beach's leader is there and he does his whole big, almost like, I'm going to explain our plan. I'm going to explain everything. And basically people are kind of forced to be there. They don't really have an option to leave if they want to. And I guess that's fun.
Yeah, it's basically like, if we invite you in, we want you to work for us. If you don't want to, we'll fucking kill you. Like, you have no choice. Once we've invited you in, you're here.
And essentially he has, he's developed the plan he's got a theory where if you collect all the cards, cause you always get a card afterwards. If you collect all the cards, then someone gets to leave this place. He called it an island, or he called it a country, gets to leave this country and go back to the,
yes,
the regular country, the real country.
Which is very interesting. Like, he's not saying it's a different world. He's saying it's a different country.
Yeah. And he says, and the reason why he's calling it that, his justification is like, well, it's, well, you get a visa to be here. And you, if your visa expires, then, you know, you have to leave or you get killed.
Right.
So as you need visas or you get visas, then to them it's a country. So like, it makes sense.
Right.
But he breaks them up, and so they've collected almost every card, but they've never seen face cards.
Or the Ten of Hearts.
Yeah, but they've never seen face cards, so they don't know if the face cards even exist.
Right. And somebody suggests, well, maybe if there are face cards, they're in a different – they're like off this island. They're not in Kyoto or Tokyo or wherever they are. Yeah.
The only remaining card they have to collect at the end of this is the Ten of Hearts by the end of this episode. Yeah, because they between the cards they took from Asari and Usagi and then the ones that they acquired in this game, because we saw a bunch of games being played at once this time, because we see them all get deployed and they go to they're on different teams and this and that, and you have two groups. You have one group that – this one group is responsible for all the guns, and Hatter's group is responsible for all the intelligence and thinking about things. And, yeah. And then they have what they call the executive members. And Arisu gets invited to join the executive members because he's smart and he can figure these games. Oh, and there's a big standoff because the leader of the people that carry the guns, you know, the general. Yeah, he sees Usagi, so he's like, oh, I want to have sex with her, so she can come with me, and I'll do whatever I want. And you know, Arisu kind of sticks up for her and is like, no. Yeah. So there's a tense standoff where he's like, go kill this guy. I'm gonna take her. Like, it's a little, cheesy. You know. Yeah, well, yeah, because like the guys with the guns essentially are being bullies. So yep. Why are you giving with the guns the bully? Like, why are the bullies the guys with the guns? And then the thinking people, the smart people, he's like, the Hatter's just like, well, you work for me, don't you? So you'll do what I say. And the guy with the gun, the leader of the gun people, is just like, yeah, okay. It's just,
Yeah.
It was dumb. It was kind of dumb, quite frankly.
So this whole episode really sucked me out of it. Like,
it did, yeah.
It didn't feel as cool and tense, and like we got too much explanation. And I know we didn't get any explanation as to what's really going on, but they gave us too much of a reality dump. And I didn't like it. It really kind of killed the magic for me.
Yeah.
Not overall. I'm not like, oh, I don't want to watch the show anymore. Just this episode really kind of killed the magic. And it also gave me my first flash of insight where I went, huh, I wonder if this whole thing is nothing more than like a big MMO, like virtual reality kind of thing where they're all plugged into, like the Matrix, you know, they're all plugged into avatars of themselves, and then when somebody dies they actually just like pop out into the real world type of thing. And
so like they don't know that they're in like this big giant VR type thing.
Exactly. I mean, it would explain how this many people were able to be put into something like that. Right.
If that's how it ends, I'm going to be more annoyed, I think, than when we saw The Village, when like the opening credits leaned over and whispered, hey, you know what? I think this takes place in current and present day, and these people don't know they're in present day. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, that'd be stupid. And that's what it was. And I was pissed. Mm-hmm. Three episodes
Dude,
left.
I was pissed.
Yeah. Three episodes left. I'm tempted to burn right through them this week. Yeah.
Well, you are on a burning frenzy, aren't you?
Well, you know, I got the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got the time. We'll see what happens, I guess. Flight Attendant, HBO Max. That's actually another one I'm enjoying the hell out of.
Yeah. Although I will say this before you get into your description, this was the it was the first week that it really stuck out to me, but the behavior of Kaylee Cuoco's character is the type of behavior that really annoys me in stories like this.
Yep.
You know, the one who like they're constantly going behind enemy lines, essentially. no, I'm going to sneak in here and I'm going to go to the funeral so that I can dig up some information. You're not a detective. You're not a private eye. You're not even good at your regular job, which is flight attendant. Like, but she's just constantly like, now I'll go sneak upstairs and see if I can find any documents. Oh, he mentioned that he shredded some papers. I'll go get the shredded papers and try to steal them. It really, like, that kind of behavior really annoys me. But anyway.
Well, no, I mean, basically, that's exactly what happened this episode. Cassie finds out that Miranda broke into her house. That freaks her out. She comes home from one of her flights, finds out that Miranda had broken into her house. So her lawyer buddy's like, all right, then you need to stay with me from now on. She ends up going to his funeral. What's his name?
Oh, Alex's funeral. What do they call him? Like C7 or something like that? Pastor
C7. C3 or something like that.
Yeah.
She goes to his, it was not really a funeral. It's a memorial service, if you will. But she goes there because she wants to, because basically when they confront Sabrina, the girl that worked at the office, who had told Cassie who Miranda was and that she knew her, when the lawyer confronts her and when the FBI talks to her, basically they say she denies knowing Miranda or who she is or anything of that nature. Completely denies everything about it. So yep. That causes tension right there straight away. So Cassie goes to the memorial service to find Alex's mom because Alex must know who Miranda is. So yeah, she goes there and then we get flashbacks of when her dad died and when she went to her dad's funeral, which was like, that's when she first started drinking hard alcohol for the first time and basically became the alcoholic that she is today. And yeah, you're right. She's going through the house. She's being very not inconspicuous. She's being very obvious. And she sneaks upstairs and she steals shredded paperwork and she straight out asks about Miranda. And then now all these guys, it's just, and when people were catching her where she shouldn't be, they implied they were dangerous people, but they didn't seem to kill her straight away or muckle onto her or do anything other than like, oh, you're in the wrong place. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I would have expected someone being physical with her. No one got physical.
Very physical. Drag her right off.
Yeah.
Find out what she knows. Drag her off here. She's asking questions. She knew Miranda's name.
Yeah. Nobody got physical with her whatsoever.
Nope. And everybody was telling her that they were dangerous. The FBI is staking out the place and sees her go in and knows that she's up to no good. I mean, it was very bad.
It was. Yeah. The episode did annoy me.
But, like you said, I'm still enjoying the show. I still want to see how it pans out. And I still want to know if the second season is going to be the same mystery or a new mystery with new people.
Yeah. Well, anyways, so long and short, we see Miranda at the end who is stalking Cassie. And it's basically implied that she's got her little switchblade knife out and she's going to do some killing.
Uh-huh.
But gets distracted by drunk people in the street and Cassie gets in the cab and
football hooligans.
Yeah. Near miss.
Dude. Anytime I hear that, I think of George Carlin.
Oh,
Near miss. A near miss is a hit. They nearly missed.
My God, that's so true. A near miss is a hit. Or it's like when people say, I couldn't care less. So that means you care.
Yeah.
It means I could care less. Yeah, I could care less. Oh, okay, that means you care.
Uh-huh.
What else did we watch for shows?
Oh, let's see. Hold on, I'm crossing these off as I go through to make sure that we don't miss anything. The Unicorn was on.
Nope. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
Nope.
Yep. It was called First Supper.
It was not on CBS All Access. Because I looked for it on Friday and Saturday.
I'm IMDBing it right now because it was on my DVR.
And I actually just checked on... I checked on Wikipedia. And so it shows the first one airing until January 21st.
Yeah, and yet I watched an episode that, this is interesting. What did I watch? Because it said that it was called First Supper, and it said that it was new, and basically, and it's been a while since I watched the first season, so maybe it was mistakenly swapped with a rerun, but let me look real quick. Forrest lost his job because Wade basically pep talked him and said, you know, just go and tell your boss that you've got ideas. And he lost his job. Ben got a really good job at a hotel and he wanted to treat everybody to dinner and stuff. And was that a first season episode?
That was.
Oh, see, it's been so long since I've watched it that I don't know.
Because remember this season, Ben gets Wade the job as the landscaper, and they have the big fight over the guy's because he calls him Mr. Can-Do, and you're going to be Mr. Can-Do too, because I want you to put this tree in. And yes. He's like, that tree is for a tropical climate. So he already had the job. So yeah, that was a repeat. That was from last season.
Okay. Well, good. Now I feel better about that.
I believe that was from last season. Might have been from earlier this season, quite frankly, but it was definitely not a new episode.
Then I guess I should mark that off my list.
Yeah.
Transformers Earthrise.
Yeah. Episode 2. What did you think of it?
I was really excited to see Quintessons until I realized it was a Quintesson. But it was the coolest version because their big thing, it reminded me of something out of Doctor Who. Like their big thing was that they needed consensus amongst all the heads and they weren't getting it. Like they wouldn't move forward until they got consensus. And there were some psychotic heads in there and it was great.
Yeah. And so then the one head cuts the other heads off.
Yeah.
So there's only one, so now you have consensus, and of course the one that cut all the other heads off is the most evil one.
Yep. But basically, this is allegedly the Quintesson who freed the Transformers, freed them from their shackles and
gave them the ability to transform.
Yep.
Which Optimus Prime counteracts and says, no, that was the Allspark.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they got in a little pissing contest there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we got to see what Project Nemesis was finally, which is basically a big spaceship.
Yep.
Little bit of a letdown.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is, considering they had to kill so many
Decepticons and Autobots.
Yeah.
But mostly Decepticons.
Yeah. To power this ship, just to have it to be a ship so they can all leave.
Yeah, so Cybertron. They can leave and they can go out and conquer the galaxy and hunt down the Allspark.
And then we met a new section of Transformers that are mercenaries, basically.
Yep.
And they looked a lot like Transformers we've seen in the past that were both Autobots or Decepticons, but they have a new insignia on them that's a combination of both, kind of. And... yeah, I do enjoy – they're taking a lot of liberties with the history of the Transformers.
The history that we knew, yes.
Yeah, they're combining a lot of the previous histories we knew or previous characters that we knew into one storyline or one world – universe, if you will. Like, you know, them killing Ultra Magnus in season one and we just see his head or – you know, all the other things going on. So,
right.
Excuse me, please. But I'm enjoying the hell out of it. It's like,
oh yeah,
this is not for kids.
Uh-uh.
This is a teen to adult version of Transformers.
Yep.
So, but yeah, I'm enjoying it.
I am as well. I'm looking forward to the next episode. So I want you to talk about this.
Okay.
because I had forgotten that this was coming, and then you were like, yeah, I watched both episodes of Call Me Cat. So
yeah.
I watched both episodes of Call Me Cat, so I want to hear your take.
Oh, okay. So that's a show that's on TV that will probably not make the first season, or it'll be on for 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. The quirky little nods at the end of the episode where they pretend like it's a play, that's going to be the only thing that keeps them on the air.
Yeah. So it stars Maya Bialik, and she's like 40 years old or whatever, 38, 39, 40. And she's always been single, and her mother just wants to set her up with everybody. And so Kat takes the money that she'd save for her wedding and says buys her own cat cafe.
Yep.
And she's got Leslie Jordan, who, I mean, the man has got to be 100 years old. Because he's one of those people that's been, like, gray-haired forever. He's only 65. Holy shit.
But he's awesome.
Yes, he is. He works he's the head baker at Cat's Cafe. And then you have Kyla Pratt from the Proud Family.
Yep.
Plays one of her waitresses. And we have, he was on New Girl, and he played Winston on New Girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't think of his real name, but I always just call him Winston.
Yeah. Anyways, he is a customer that doesn't tip against his political beliefs or whatever. So, of course, him and Randy, or Kyla Pratt's character, they're probably going to be a thing at some point. Right. But anyhow,
makes a good point. He's basically like, if I tip, then it just encourages the system where they keep you down and pay you less than minimum wage, yep, and you have to rely on tips.
But basically, it's about Kat's love life, her getting set up with guys and trying to, navigate her way while running her own business and dealing with her mom, who just wants her grandchildren and set her up with everybody and et cetera, et cetera. And of course, we have the guy that back in town, he works at a bar next door, or he owns the bar next door near Kat's place. And they used to go to high school together, and he was living in Europe or France or whatever. And he's separated from his woman, but he still kind of wants to get back with her. And so he's a love interest, and Kat is very quirky and awkward. And she talks to the camera a lot and looks at the camera a lot,
And imagines his girlfriend that she's never met, but then this woman appears on the screen, she's talking to Kat.
And we see her, like you said, at the end of both episodes, everyone kind of, the audience applauds, like it's being filmed in front of a live studio audience, and they wave at the camera like they're at the end of a play where everyone comes out and takes a bow.
Yep, they pop up from behind a counter or something. And
yeah, they all the actors, including the imaginary girlfriend, acknowledge the audience with waving and this and that. And then, like, after they all acknowledge it, they go right back. Like, the guy was selling that he'd gotten hit in the head or poked in the eye. And then he stops, I'll wave at the audience, and he goes right back to selling that he got poked in the eye or something. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So there's a lot of quirkiness. There's some originality to it. It apparently is based on a BBC show from like 10 years ago or something like that, from what I remember when I was reading about it.
Okay.
I don't know if I like it or not.
I don't like it so far.
Okay.
I don't hate it. I don't like, I'm not like, oh, this fucking show sucks, but I have not liked it. Like, what I watched of it, I was like, okay, this is to me, it's the worst parts of a sitcom, the canned laughter or audience, I don't know what it is. And, the cheesy overdone jokes, and it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to continue with it or not, basically.
Yeah. Well, I think this is going to be one of those, like, if you continue with it, then I'll rely on your updates. But I'm not going to continue with it. So if you don't, then it'll just disappear.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to keep watching it or not either.
Okay.
So, frankly.
Speaking of that, I will say this very quickly, which I kind of mentioned to you earlier in another message. This week, I accidentally watched The Stand and Sweet Home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm done with both of those.
Yep. Okay. I did not watch either one because I was just like, suck it.
Yep. And
it's kind of made a good choice. Sweet Home started out really good.
It did.
And I was very excited about The Stand, and I thought it had tremendous potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're cutting right through the list here. You want to talk real quick about Marvel's Legends?
I mean, sure, go ahead.
So basically, WandaVision comes out this week, and it's very exciting. But Marvel's Legends was put out this week as a preparatory for that. And basically, these are going to be highlighting shows that highlight some of their Marvel Cinematic Universe heroes. They are not the comic book versions. They are the MCU versions. And essentially, they had one for Vision and one for Scarlet Witch. And all it is like 8 minutes long, and they are clip shows from the different movies that these two have appeared in. It's not just random clips. It's kind of a progression of their characters and tries to tell you stories like where they're from, how they came to be, where they're going, where we last left them. So it is actually done well for something that's only 8 minutes. Like if this was a half an hour, I think it would be a slog. I thought it was going to be more of like a deep dive talking about the history of these characters and their comic counterparts and how they change for the big screen, like a documentary kind of thing. But it's not. It's literally just 8 minutes of clip shows.
I mean, and realistically, it's very well done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it is well done. And they definitely remind you of the characters and where they came. Like, I forgot that when we first met Wanda, she had a very thick Russian accent, and now she doesn't have one anymore. So I think that's right. Hilarious. But yeah, you're right. I read online there was a lot of people disappointed with it because it wasn't what they thought it was going to be.
But at the same time, it's free content. Like,
yes.
You didn't have to pay anything extra for it.
It's basically like, on the last episode, or let's review, you know, the previous episode or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. So, that was that. But definitely, WandaVision comes out this week. I'm super stoked. They're going to have two episodes when it premieres, and then I believe it's one a week after that. So, I assume we'll be watching both the episodes when it premieres.
Oh, yeah. This Friday. Yeah, this coming Friday. 1,000% we'll be watching both episodes.
Good.
Yeah, no doubt about that whatsoever.
Now, along those lines of something that I thought it was going to be more than what it was and was kind of disappointing, not terribly disappointing, but kind of disappointing, History of Swear Words.
Yeah, that was 20 minutes long, and it wasn't that great.
No. Like, the first episode was on the word fuck, and they just said it a lot. And you had, like, comedians and actors who were like, oh, this word is great, and I love this word, and it can do this, and it can mean this. And, like, this was not the history of it. And, in fact, one of the first things they said about the history of it is nobody knows where it came from.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm trying to think. They implied that the word, and I don't say this word, C-U-N-T, is not as bad as fuck. Like, they said fuck is the worst swear word. I'm like, no, it's really not, in my opinion. And I know in England they use that word a ton. It's just for, you know, especially
Australia as well.
Australia as well, yeah. But for me, I do not think that is a less bad word, I guess, is the word I'm going to use to describe it. I don't know. Maybe that's not the proper way to describe it, but I don't know. It was okay. I'll watch the second episode, but yeah, it wasn't as great as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's a background show at this point for me. Like, I watched the first one intently, and then I was like, the fuck? So.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So let's see, I'm looking at my list here.
We got to talk about Cobra Kai,
The Rookie, Discovery, and Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Oh, wait, we finished Discovery this week? I thought we finished Discovery last week.
No, because last week we watched like three episodes and we were like, shit, we got to wait for one more episode.
Oh, that's right. Well, you know what it was? I came home from surgery Thursday. I got there at 6 a.m. I was home by 1 o'clock. I went right to bed because I was exhausted from the anesthesia. Woke up at like 4:30 and then proceeded to watch Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, Star Trek Discovery, and something else. And I don't know if it was the anesthesia, but I basically bawled my eyes out for 3 hours, especially when I texted you when I was watching Zoe. Like, I just started the episode. And literally watching the beginning of this episode, I was thinking about the ending of the season finale last year where they were singing American Pie.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm like, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm not even watching that episode. They're not even talking about it. And yet I'm thinking about it and I'm getting very emotional right now. It was dumb. Dumb, but in a good way dumb.
I was going to say, it's understandable. Dude, that show... Yeah. Had a lot of emotional moments, and that finale was
So what'd you think of the season two return?
I'm of two minds about it. On the one hand, I loved it because I'm glad to have this show back.
Yep.
On the other hand, I'm a little worried because it reminded me of, remember when Supergirl came back and Kat was kind of written off the show?
Yeah.
And it all went downhill and the whole show changed?
Yep.
Like the driving force of the first season was her dad and everything that he was going through and the fact that we were building towards his death and ended up getting it.
And he died. Now,
yeah. So that driving force is not here in this season, which is huge.
And then Lauren Graham is essentially written off the show because she's going to take, like, heading up the Singapore office.
Yep.
So not going to be on the show.
And I thought I recalled reading that Skylar Astin, who plays Max, was also going to be leaving the show. But he was in this one. But then he and Mo kind of had their little brainstorm about what about a restaurant that serves food from other restaurants?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's like a backdoor to get him out of there. I don't know. It just, I'm worried that if they don't have a good focus, that this show is just going to become like a random mess of sing-along numbers and not much driving force.
Because you're right. The focus of last season was Zoe's dad's disease and eventual death. So it'll be interesting to see, because this first episode was basically like, all right, she can hear people singing still, and we're going to set up going forward what's going to happen this season as far as, you know, both her love interests are single.
Yep.
They're both pining over her. But at the same time, they're both – they're now their best friends because they became friends.
While she was in her six-week depression.
While she was in her seclusion, they all became friends and friends with Mo, and they all hang out together.
Yep.
At the end of the episode, she does make out with Max.
Yes. It's like she kind of picked Max.
And that goes along with you saying that, did they just do that because he's going to be leaving the show? And it says, okay, look, she picked Max, but now Max is gone, so now she can go to the other guy. So...
Right.
So I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see. I still enjoyed the episode.
Yep. Oh yeah. And I'm very happy to have it back. Like I said,
me too. The season finale of Star Trek Discovery.
Yes. Tell me your thoughts on this.
Well, it was funny cause this is called The Hope That Is You Part 2.
Yep.
You know, we get they solve the fact that only Stamets can make the ship jump.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like in the most, like, to use your term, Mary Sue way.
Yeah, exactly. They basically set the show up very well by the end of it. Like, all right, so the kid that was causing, I mean, Yeah. So basically, Michael gets aboard the ship. Everybody gets free. She kills Osira. And the Emerald Chain collapses. They take the ship back. They rescue everybody off of the radiation planet, so everyone's safe. We get a great moment in this episode where, because of I don't think it was Gray's name, Adira. Yep. Because she's down on the ship, the hologram from the ship makes Gray visible because it recognizes Gray as a being. And I love the moment where,
all I want to say is Stamet, but it's not. It's really what you're talking about.
Yeah. The doctor.
Yeah.
You know, Stamet's his husband.
Yep. And I can't think of his name for the life of me right now.
I can't think of it either. And it's just driving me crazy. And I know I think it starts with an A. Culber.
Yes, starts with an A, Culber.
Yeah, so Culber, like, sees Gray and hugs him. I don't know why, but I love this little family of Culber and Stamets immediately accepting Adira as, this is our daughter, and Gray's our son, and we're going to figure out, you know what I mean? I don't know why, but I just love this little family so much that they've created on this show. It's outstanding to me. But yeah, so we get to see Gray, so that's great. He gets to interact with people. Like, we're going to figure out a way for to make this happen again. Maybe on their own holodeck, whatever. But they all get rescued. They figure out a way rather quickly, apparently, to mine all the dilithium off this planet. They really wrap everything up. Saru decides to go back to... Dude,
that is the understatement of the century. They didn't wrap everything up. Like, they wrapped up everything.
Yeah, Saru and Sakaal are going to go to his home planet so they can deal with things and everything. And they make Burnham the captain of Discovery. And, you know, it was a good episode. They wrapped everything up. You know, they opened up for, we're going to have a season 4. Anything could happen now in season 4 because they're delivering the dilithium to people. They know what caused the burn. It wasn't, you know, the Romulans or the Vulcans' fault. I can't think what they call them combined now. People are starting to come back to the Federation, so the Federation's growing again. I don't know. They really
Emerald Chain has been destroyed because they took out their leader.
Yes. Yes, Osira was killed, so the Emerald Chain collapsed immediately. I mean, yeah. So it's like every other season, like season 1 was a complete setup to get us to season 2. Season 2 was a complete setup to get us to season 3. Season 3 pretty much wrapped up everything, and there was no setup for season 4.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's no storyline. Like, yeah. So it's like season 4, literally anything can happen. They have a blank slate, if you will. I mean, yes, they've established the world they've established, but like in every other season, there was like a big cliffhanger going into the next. And we don't have that at all.
It almost feels like they did this not knowing if they were going to get another season.
Yes. It's like, all right, here's a satisfying ending in case we don't get another season. You're right. But we're going to get another season of this. We're going to get another season of Picard. Allegedly, we're getting a Captain Pike show with Anson Mount as Captain Pike, which I will watch the fuck out of that. yeah. I enjoyed it, but yes, it really did wrap up in a nice, neat little bow.
Yeah. And I'm okay with it because... Yep. You know, again, they probably didn't know if they were getting another season, and it is nice to kind of not have a big cliffhanger hanging over, but it was so convenient. Like, everything was convenient.
Yes, everything was.
And here's an unlimited supply of dilithium, and we figured out how to mine it, and we got rid of the cause of the burn, and Michael gets to be the captain, and Saru's going to go meet up with his people, and we figured out that this guy is an empath, so he can pilot the ship too, because that's all we were missing was an empath.
Yep. We're talking about book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, It was a good season of show, though.
Absolutely.
It's a good season of TV.
Yep.
All right. What's next?
I'm trying to. So what we've got left is the season premiere of The Rookie, and then we blasted through Cobra Kai.
Did you watch episode 2 of The Rookie?
I did not.
Okay.
You said that, and I was like, no, I'm busy, and I want to be able to, you know, pay attention. And
well, I'll just say episode 2 was great. And earlier in the week when I messaged you about episode 1, I said, did you watch it yet? And you're like, not yet. I wanted to say, and here's what I wanted to say to you, which is, well, they wrapped that up real quick.
Yes.
Because, you know, season 2 ends with Nolan finding, like, the stash of the him being set up in his wall, and you know, Armstrong's in the hospital, and the police are there to arrest Nolan, and he's going to be set up, and I'm like, great, this whole season's going to be Nolan trying to clear his name, and on and on and on, and nope, by the end of this episode, everyone was back where they belonged. The only difference is Nolan gets a 30-day extension on his on being a boot,
and
he got a letter. He got a letter of reprimand placed in his file, which essentially is like the death knell of, because it happened while you were a rookie or while you were in training as a boot, then you will never go anywhere in this department except for being a patrolman. So you have to accept that's where you're going to be. And I'm like, at 45, he's probably like, yeah, that's where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, they wrap this up pretty quick. Armstrong gets outed as being the bad guy, and I don't understand
how the whole standoff there when Nolan agrees to go undercover and he stands off with them, you know, he's standing there and surrounded by the guys with the guns and what's his name there? You just said it. The asshole. Armstrong.
Yeah.
You know, he shows up and he's like, huh, 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 I knew you were too good of a Boy Scout. I don't understand how Nolan A survived, B got the drop on all of them, and C, like won the day.
Well, here's my thought. Excuse me. The big bad guy, the head boss guy that, he essentially kills Armstrong because he's realized it's all, you're useless now. You're no good to me, so I'm going to kill you. But my thought was the reason why they didn't shoot Nolan straight away was because he's like, I still need someone inside. Nolan's been set up so I can still use him.
Right.
You know what I mean? Maybe that's what he thought.
Maybe.
But you're right. I mean, Nolan did manage to scamper away and not have a weapon on him.
Why is the gun that they gave him to fire at Nolan empty?
Well, because maybe he doesn't want him to turn around and shoot him. He doesn't want Armstrong to, like, side with Nolan and try to shoot the bad guys.
I couldn't believe that. They're like, hey, you want the honors? And he's like, yeah, I do. So they hand him a gun. He walks up, points it at Nolan, says, no, I'm not going to mess around this time. I'm going to fucking shoot you in the head. And then click, 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 click.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I get it. I love the show. I love the characters. But yeah, they were just like, you know what? We're going to take a whole season's worth of show and just finish it up right now in this one episode.
Yeah.
We get back to Nolan being on patrol.
Oh, and fucking, what is it? Diaz there? Or
she got a promotion to being a detective. Yep.
But there's a hitch.
She's
pregnant.
Pregnant. I did like, all right, so I like when Nolan is in the house and the police show up outside, the first thing he does is call Diaz's boyfriend. You know, one of the Ashmore's, Sean, yes. You know, Wesley, yep. Sean Ashmore. And he's like, I kind of need to hire you as a lawyer. Okay, why? And he tells him, and he's like, okay, I'll take your case. Do this, do this, do this. I thought that was fantastic.
Yes, it was very
when they both when both Diaz and Wesley showed up at the judge's house for Diaz wanting to get the signature on the warrant, and Wesley was trying to refute why they shouldn't get it, and the judge was like, aren't you guys together?
They're like, yeah. He's like, good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck, then. So, I don't know. I just, and then, you know, when Nolan isn't listening to Wesley, and he's like, oh, I quit, by the way. And Nolan's like, I get it. You know, I don't know. Yeah. I like the interaction with the characters on the show.
Yes. Yes. And like you said, I love so much of this show. You know, I loved Chen basically saying, like, you know, he wouldn't have put it somewhere we could find it, you know, or they see the bag of trash down the hill. And she's like, no, that's a distraction because we'd have to get a separate warrant because that's on somebody else's property. And he wouldn't have done that. He wouldn't have left it out there. He would have put it someplace else.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot to really like about it.
Yep.
But again, like you said, you know, this was a massive cliffhanger after several episodes of building up, like, oh my God, Armstrong's a bad guy. Oh my God, what are they going to do? And then everything was just tidy little bow.
Yes, they did build for a long time that Armstrong was a piece of shit. They made him a likable character last season, and they made him a hateable character. And then, we're at where we're at. And it's almost like episode two. It's like it's the next day and everything's back to normal. No one's talking about it. And we're just right back to doing what we were doing. But not in a hateable way. And more of like, all right, we've moved on, everybody.
Right.
So. There we go. Sorry. Cobra Kai. That's the last show we have to talk about, is it not?
For shows, yes.
All right. Cobra Kai.
I'm bringing it up on IMDb so that I can look at the different episodes. So I will say this right off just before we get into it. Right from the day that this dropped, all of the sites out there were like, so what was the plan if Ali Sheedy had – or what's her name there? Not
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. What if she hadn't been able to come back for the show? What were they going to do? And I'm just like, they didn't even try to hide it. Like, there wasn't, like, spoiler returns. It was just straight up, like, oh, yeah, Allie's back. And
realistically, I felt like we needed to binge through this show because there's so many spoilers out there. We're already talking about it. And it's just like, well, if we wait an episode a week, we're already going to know what's going to happen. And might as well just watch it. Let's just watch it and get it done. I did notice this season, all the episodes were longer. And seasons one and two, they were like 20 to 27 minutes. And in this season, they were like 35 to 40 minutes. The overall arcing, if you haven't watched it yet, you might want to skip ahead.
Yeah.
The overall arcing of the story is this. John Kreese is overtaking Cobra Kai. Johnny's all depressed and sad. He gets Miguel back walking again with his methods. He creates Eagle Fang. Eagle Fang Karate Dojo, and he gets students. On the other side of thing, Daniel shuts down Miyagi-Do for a little while, then a few episodes in decides I got to bring Miyagi-Do back because these kids need to defend themselves because the Cobra Kai kids are just straight up breaking the law.
And the problem that I had in a lot of this was that they were just straight up fucking, like, they should have been arrested
multiple times. Yes. And they kept making it play like, the Cobra Kai people behind the scenes or in front of authority figures would say all the right things and do all the right things and make it seem like that they're the victims or they're just being kids. And that the other people like Daniel or his wife or Johnny or the Miyagi-Do students or the Eagle Fang students are the bad guys. You know what I mean? That's what the implication is. And so that got fast. But like when you have the Cobra Kai kids, you know, jumping over the counter at the arcade and stealing stuff, that's theft. You call the police and they get arrested.
Correct.
Or when they into the zoo so they can steal a cobra, that's theft. You know, or at the big fight at the end where the Miyagi-Do kids and the American—I keep on calling it American Eagle. The Eagle Fang kids are together, and they're like, "All right, we need to work together so we can stop Cobra Kai, because you know that's what we need to do." And they have that big fight at the end. Call the police!
Yeah,
they
broke into my house and assaulted
us. I loved it when they, like, the one kid's like, "Oh, I'm going to let your cat in." And Sam's like, "I don't have a cat." And everyone's like, "Well, Sam, do you not have a cat?" And then the kid gets thrown through the window, and Miguel runs over and goes, "Tom, what happened?" "I just got thrown through a fucking window. That's what happened. Like, I'm unconscious."
Yeah, like, what did they think happened? Like, he just went outside and a gust of wind blew him through the window?
Yeah, and all the Cobra Kai kids jumped in, and then there's this big fight at the end, of course. So it was just, I had issues with that. So, like, the other red herrings in there, they cancel the All Valley tournament, but they get...
For half an episode.
Yeah, because we don't need this violence. Even though it's going to be the 51st annual one. But John Kreese and Johnny and Daniel all show up to say, "Hey, we need it, and this is why." But they're doing a terrible job of it. But Miguel and Sam managed to talk them into it by passionately making their plea of why we need this. And basically the city council is like, "Fine, but y'all need to sign waivers saying the city's not responsible." They probably were doing that already, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But anyhow. And they're like, "Yup." So I'm like, "All right, so the finale's going to be this All-Valley tournament." Nope. That's apparently the season 4 plot.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else major storyline? Like, I don't know how much you want to get into.
We got a lot of Kreese's backstory.
Yes, yes.
And we're supposed to be empathizing with him more, which it's still hard to do. You can look at his backstory and you can say, "Wow, he was treated shitty. Wow, he was kind of driven to the kill or be killed mentality." But at the same time, he still decided to move on to be a piece of shit.
I really wanted them to show footage of him in Rambo First Blood Part 2.
I know.
Because, I mean, it fits. The mannerisms, yeah. The way he stood, how he was an asshole, it fits. Like, that could have still been Kreese, quite frankly. Yep. But yeah, we get to see his backstory being in Vietnam, meeting his sensei who teaches him to strike first, and that whole storyline, and them being kidnapped by the Vietnamese, and on and on and on. We do get that. And you're right. It is made for us to empathize with it, but you just couldn't. We see Robbie in jail or in juvenile correction, and then, you know, the dealing with the bullying in there, and then fighting back for himself, and then he gets out, and, you know, Daniel and Johnny both try to, like, bring him over to their side, but they fail, and Kreese brings him to the dark side of Cobra Kai.
Which is helped along because, you know, Miguel and Sam have one little moment of holding each other in the middle of, like, a karate move, and that happens to be the moment that Robbie walks in. I don't like convenient stuff like that, you know? Yeah. Very 90210 kind of bullshit.
Right. And essentially, Robbie doesn't have a lot of reason to, like, hate Daniel and his dad, quite frankly.
Right.
But he does.
Yep.
So that's they should have. One of the coolest episodes was when this fake car company, alleged from Japan, signs an exclusive deal with a rival car dealership. So Daniel goes to Japan. I'm using quote fingers.
Yeah.
And we get flashbacks of Karate Kid Part 2, and we get to see excuse me, I'm trying to think of the girl's name.
Yuki,
yeah, we get to see Yuki, and we get to see Chosen, and we find out that Chosen's also a practitioner of Miyagi-Do because of his sensei Sato, and he teaches Daniel stuff from Miyagi-Do that Mr. Miyagi never taught Daniel. And of course, when we first meet Chosen, he's an angry guy, and then when he finally gets Daniel where he wants him and he honks his nose, now they're best buds. But I still love seeing Chosen. I love seeing Yuki. And then what did you think of the very unique or very convenient tie-in with the girl that Daniel saves from the typhoon?
Oh, that was beautiful.
Yes.
Like, it was, like you said, it was very convenient, but at the same time, kudos to them. Yep. You know, that was such a throwaway scene in the entire second movie that I'd completely even forgotten about it. And then he's like, it's you. And I'm like, fuck, way to go, guys. Like, digging deep.
They bring in the girl that that Daniel saved from the typhoon. And we got to see clips in this season from all three, from the Karate Kids Part 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
They tied all three movies in, which was fantastic, quite frankly.
Yes.
But anyways, we see this girl, and she's now an adult, because it's been 30 years, and she works international sales, and she happens to work at the car dealership. Toyota, whatever. And she's basically like, Daniel, son, I'm going to save your business like you saved my life. Yep. And Yuki's like, see, it all works out the way it's supposed to, you know?
Yeah, I actually loved the interactions with him and Chosen.
Me too.
Chosen came across as being a real dick and a real hard ass. And he basically was just giving him shit because of the way that things had gone down. And then at the end, he just kind of like laughed. Like you said, he paralyzed him and then honked his nose. And he's like, God, I've been waiting for years to do that. Hey, man, we're buddies.
Yeah. Yeah, we can do this. So I thought it was fantastic. I think it was like we got two episodes of Daniel in Japan, and those are my favorite episodes of the season. And it really, like, watching the show, first of all, I know we talked about some of the cheesiness in the storylines, but they have great storylines in this show. There's great acting in the show.
Oh, absolutely. You know?
And it just astounds me how popular the show is considering what the source material is.
I know.
Like,
I know. It's insane.
I never would have thought as a kid watching the Karate Kid movies that as an adult, I'll be excitedly watching three seasons of a show called Cobra Kai based on them and their, you know, Daniel and John in their 50s.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And I really love how they tie all the movies in.
Yeah.
We get flashbacks from all the movies.
And we know that they're going to be tying it in even more because you know that the person that he talked to on the phone at the end of this season was Silver.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And they kind of threw you off by like they in his flashbacks in Vietnam, you know, they had Ponytail and Ponytail was the first one to get shot.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Silver always had the ponytail. So they're kind of like baiting and switching you there. But it's going to be Silver. And I'm betting they're going to get the same actor and it's going to be fucking great.
Oh, most likely. And then I read something today that season 4 of Cobra Kai is the perfect way to bring Hilary Swank character back in. Because
I love that.
Because she, they've already stated that movie is canon.
Yep.
And she learned from Mr. Miyagi as well. And if you have, you know, Daniel and Johnny working together to train their students to take on Cobra Kai, you can bring her in as another instructor, especially to help with the girls.
Right.
And to show us what she learned from Mr. Miyagi. So if they can get Hilary Swank to come back and do that, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Real quick. At the end of episode 9, if you will, or the end of episode 9, we see 8, we see Allie is back in town.
Yep. Elizabeth Shue. That's what it was.
Yep. Yeah. Elizabeth Shue's back and she's back in town and she's now separated from her husband. And, you know, we're going to see that, her, you know, she contacts Johnny. And so Johnny is just kind of him and me, Miguel's mom, Carmen. They do the wild thing and they're together now.
Yes.
And so Johnny, but then when Allie shows
they're
up,
they're not like, really together because they sleep together. And then she's like, we need to talk later and figure out what we're going to do. Like, I don't know if I want a relationship. She's like, let's figure this out.
But I'm just like, oh, Johnny's going to fuck this one up too, because he is, and that's going to piss me off.
Yep.
But instead, he does spend the day with Allie in town. They go to lunch, and he tries to impress her, but then he's just honest with her. And they have real talk. And they end up going to the Christmas party at the country club together, and they meet Daniel and his wife there. And basically, Daniel and Johnny, with Allie's help, as in like a mediator, talk and kind of settle their differences.
Yep.
and yeah. basically are able to come together.
She has a really good line in there where she basically is like, each of you thinks that you've got, she said, each of you thinks that you have the whole story. And they're like, yeah, there's two sides to every story. She goes, no, there's three, your side, and the truth.
Yes. And then they start to admit, like, all right, well, I mean, I guess I was kind of a dick. Yeah, I guess I had some, I have some blame in this as well, and on and on and back and forth. And I liked how they use her to tie it up. And then Allie says to Johnny, basically, like, so, looks like you got someone special.
Yeah, tell me about this beautiful woman that you're with.
Yeah, and Johnny's like, I think she's the one, or, you know, basically he's like, I want to do the right thing, or I want to treat her well, or whatever it is. But basically Johnny says, I like this girl, and I think I need to tell her that. And Allie's like, yeah, you do. Cause you know, I'm going back to Colorado with my kids. I can't be on this show and be in a relationship with you, but no. But I like how they handled it though. Because it leaves it that – so Johnny goes back to talk to Carmen. And, of course, that's when he discovers that there's been a big fight.
Yes.
The big fight at Russo's. So he goes to confront John Kreese. And, of course, he finds out Robbie's there. So him and Kreese fight. There's a great fight, really. And then Robbie finally steps in because he's like, listen to him, Dad, or whatever. And then Johnny's like, I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to fight you. And then he, in a defensive move, accidentally throws Robbie into a locker, and Robbie gets knocked down. He's concerned about him. So Kreese, of course, attacks Johnny from behind, and he's choking him out, and Daniel shows up.
Yep.
And then Daniel and Kreese fight. It's great. And that's when it leads. Yeah. And that's when it leads to the ending where you have Miguel and Sam show up. Because Daniel's used his new technique, T. Lewis from Chosen, to kind of temporary paralyze with the Miyagi pressure points, Kreese, and you think he's going to kill Kreese.
Yep.
You know? And he looks at Johnny, who nods his head, and so it's like, oh, they're on the same page. And then Sam shows up with Miguel and stop them, and then you have Johnny with Miguel and Sam with Daniel. And then Robbie shows up next to Kreese and he's like, you all need to leave. And basically they all go their separate ways. Cause it's like, all right, we'll settle this at the All Valley tournament. And if Kreese loses, then he'll leave Cobra Kai and he'll leave. And if Johnny and Daniel lose, we won't. That's all they say. We won't. And then, you know, the end scene is Miyagi-Do and Eagle Fang together at Miyagi-Do's dojo with Johnny and Daniel together to instruct them. So I like the season. It was great.
Absolutely. Loved it. And it just kept getting better every episode.
Yeah. Have they officially announced the season 4? I think did.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Before this one even came out.
Yeah. Just like I did read today that we are getting a second season of Alice in Borderland.
Oh, good.
All right. What else we got to talk about?
I think other than that, it's just trailers and news.
All righty.
Because you already talked about all the movies. I didn't watch any movies, so.
All right. What you got for news?
I'm saving that one. A cinematographer who will be working on the Moon Knight show has put up on his Twitter. He was so excited to be working with Oscar Isaac. So. Pretty much confirmed that Oscar Isaac will be in Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You may know this. Roku bought all of Quibi's shows because Quibi kind of went under.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep, they bought all of Quibi's shows and they're going to be putting them on the Roku channel.
Oh, okay, cool.
The CW has decided not to move forward with Green Arrow and the Canaries.
Yes, I did read that earlier this week and I thought probably for the best.
Yep. What's his name there? I want to say Rob Liefeld, but it's not Rob Liefeld. Basically, one of the head honchos over at Marvel. I can't even think of
Kevin Feige.
Yeah. He was talking about WandaVision, and they asked him a bunch of questions, and he came up with some answers. I'm not going to go through everything, but one thing that I found was interesting was that each show that they're putting out, they want it to be about 6 hours long. So, She-Hulk is going to be 10 episodes, but they're all going to be about a little over half an hour each. to make up for the 6 hours. WandaVision is 9 episodes. Falcon and Winter Soldier is 6, but they're going to be an hour.
Yeah, there's been a lot of news this week. Like, Kevin Feige says this. Kevin Feige has said that.
But a lot of it was headlines, and then get into the story, and it's like, he didn't really say anything.
Right. Like, you know, he didn't confirm that, you know, Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire coming back.
But he didn't deny it either.
But he did say, it's funny when I read the news or the rumors on the internet, some of them they're dead on and others they're not even close.
Right.
There was talk that Jessica Jones, that Kristen Ritter could come back as Jessica Jones in the new She-Hulk series.
Yep.
I did see, I saw a lot of scuttlebutt on that.
Excuse me.
Which again makes me want to go watch the last season of Jessica Jones on Netflix just to check the box. Oh,
that's right. I never watched that.
Yeah.
Probably the best news to come out of all that, though, was complete confirmation that Deadpool 3 will be starting to film in 2022.
Yep.
It will be R-rated, and it will be an official part of the MCU.
Yep. So that's cool. Oh, boy.
I'm looking
at it. What else you got, sir?
Oh, they have zero detail. The headline I'm about to give you is all the detail that I have. But it's still worth mentioning because it's a very big what the fuck kind of thing. They're actually making a TV series based on Risk, the board game.
Okay.
And again, they have no details, zero. So I don't know if it's going to be like a political thriller or if it's going to be like an over-the-top comical kind of thing or what it's going to be. But they've secured the rights to make this, so whatever.
Okie dokie.
And then I've got two bigger pieces of news that I really liked that I wanted to save till the end. One of them, they've officially announced the overarching villain for the Dexter revival.
Oh, yes.
The unofficial mayor of the small town of Iron Lake, who's realized the American dream by going from driving big rigs, just like his father did, to now owning several trucks in the local truck stop. Powerful, generous, loved by everyone. He's a true man of the people. If he's got your back, consider yourself blessed. But should you cross Kurt or hurt anyone he cares for, God help you. That will be played by Clancy Brown.
Yeah. So is this going to be on Showtime?
Yes.
Ah, it sucks. I don't have Showtime.
Yeah, you can do like you do with CBS and get like, you know, 1 month through something else.
Yeah.
You know, like Amazon offers deals sometimes or different services offer.
Yeah, like right now, actually, I think I saw a Showtime deal that's running out soon. But if you get it through Hulu, it's like $4.99 a month for 6 months. But yeah. But you have to subscribe for 6 months. So.
And then the other one, and I can't remember if I sent you this or not, but I've still got to say it out loud because it's fucking amazing. There's a new HBO Max comedy series coming out called Our Flag Means Death. It's a period comedy about pirates, more specifically loosely based on the life and misadventures of a real life man named Stede Bonnet, who in the 18th century was known as the Gentleman Pirate. Bonnet was a wealthy aristocrat on the island of Barbados who gave up his privileged life to become a pirate. Okay, that's cool enough. The main character who will be playing the gentleman pirate Stede Bonnet is Riz Darby.
Can you bind that?
Oh, that's not the best news, though. The person who will be creating and producing and directing this? Taika Waititi.
Yep, I can definitely get behind that one. You did send me that. I'm like, this all sounds very familiar.
Yeah. I am so down for this shit. Riz Darby, who you and I on this podcast have sung the praises of multiple times over, as well as Taika Waititi.
Most certainly have.
And they're doing a comedy show about pirates. Holy fuck. Yes, yes, yes. On HBO Max, so they'll be free to go over the top.
You shared a trailer with me. I'm sorry. Do you have any more news?
Nope, no more news. But one piece of news that's kind of tied to the trailers, which is that Netflix one. But go ahead.
Well, you shared a trailer that basically it was a Netflix trailer about upcoming movies, and it had 27 titles in the trailer.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go through all 27 of them because it's 27 fucking titles in the trailer. Right. But Netflix is going to be releasing a movie a week, at least a movie. Oh, I almost dropped my computer. At least a movie a week.
Yeah, because the 27 titles that you had in there, that was 27 out of 70 that they have planned.
Yeah. One's called The Harder They Fall. That is an upcoming Western, which looks great. It stars Jonathan Majors, who's playing Atticus in Lovecraft Country.
Yep.
And Idris Elba's in it. And it's Nate Love resembles his former, reassembles his former gang to seek revenge against the man who murdered his parents. Yep. So it's a Western revenge flick. The Woman in the Window is an Amy Adams flick. She is kind of like a Rear Window type thing. She's an agoraphobic who witnesses something bad across the street. But the cast in this is absolutely amazing. Amy Adams, Gary Oldman, Anthony Mackie, Wyatt Russell, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Julianne Moore. It's a huge cast.
Yep.
Another title that caught my eye was The Last Mercenary. And this stars Jean-Claude Van Damme. So it's probably going to be terrible, but I'll watch the shit out of it anyways.
Yep.
there was a ton of other movies. There was like a superhero movie called Thunder Force with the girl that played Ma and Suki.
Yes.
Let's get the other names.
Kissing Melissa Booth McCarthy and Octavia Spencer.
Yes. The Kissing Booth Part 3 and To All the Boys Always and Forever. So Part 3 on that one. Batista movie, and then the one that they were really pushing was Red Notice, which has The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot. So, yeah, a lot of great flicks.
Yes, and like you said, at least one a week for the entire year, which is awesome.
What was your other bit of news in relation to
that? No, that was it, just that they were doing that.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other trailers... I sent you one for Lockdown, which is the HBO Max thriller. It couldn't have left that big of an impression on me because I don't remember it now.
Well, no, it starts out basically like this couple that are in lockdown and they're in England, I think it is. And you think it's just going to kind of be like the TV show we saw on Hulu with David Tennant. But then all of a sudden it switches up and it's going to be a heist movie.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
That was unexpected. I even saw headlines like Lockdown, the trailer no one expected. Or the trailer where that just caught people off guard or something. Because I'm watching the trailer and at first, like, okay, it's going to be kind of, oh, shit. No, this is a heist movie? Okay, I'll watch this. I can't remember who's in it. I feel like Graham.
It was definitely one of those, like, I don't know. It almost seemed like two different movies.
Yes, it did.
And it could, it had the potential to look terrible. But it's got Anne Hathaway, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Ben Stiller, Mindy Kaling, Ben Kingsley, Stephen Merchant, Mark Gatiss. I mean, there's a lot of big stars in this.
Yes, there is.
So... yeah, that'll be fun. I sent you a documentary preview for More Than Miyagi.
Yeah, about Pat Morita.
Yeah.
That looks fun.
And how broken and damaged he was, honestly. Like, I had no idea, but they show like his early, early days back in the 70s appearing on TV shows and stuff like that. And then apparently he really was a hardcore alcoholic. They thought he was going to die several times.
Yeah, I mean, you see him on Happy Days and MASH and other shows. And then, of course, you know, the Karate Kid.
Yep.
So it is kind of surprising to see kind of how bad off he was, if you will.
Yep. I'm excited to watch that, though. That'll be cool. They gave us a full trailer for Clarice, the CBS show.
Okay. So the issue with this I have is they cannot reference Hannibal Lecter in any way. Shape or
any of the characters that appeared in the Hannibal TV show.
Yep.
So they basically have Clarice and Buffalo Bill.
And obviously they show us Buffalo Bill, but basically it's, and from the trailer, you have Clarice who's like, you need to get back out there and go after serial killers, and that's what you do best at. She's like, I caught one. Well, you did a good job of it. We need you out there. And then it cut to her first day there, basically being treated like a low-level rookie piece of shit by everybody else. So it kind of turned me off a little bit.
Yeah.
Me watching it. And I don't know. It just looks very dark. And they can't even really use the source material for her or for her, the universe her character belongs to.
Right.
So.
Yep. And then the last trailer that I sent you was a weird one this afternoon called Bloody Hell.
Yeah, that looks great. I don't know what it's about other than it looks great and you should go watch the trailer.
Yeah, it's a horror movie that just, yeah, I couldn't tell either, but it looks like a great horror movie.
Yeah, again, I really can't explain it. But it does look good, and just go watch the trailer. So, I don't believe I shared any trailers with you this week.
No, you did not.
Yeah. So, I guess, so is that everything?
I think that was everything.
All right, well, I guess that's everything. on Twitter, I'm Superstar Mal.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
And that's our show.
We'll talk to you later.